Hey there. You're listening to the In Kinship Podcast. And today I have the distinct pleasure of talking with Ricky Oldenkamp. Ricky is somebody I have known for the last probably nearly 30 years, but I have not known much of her story for the last 20. And I am really excited that we get to dive into that together and listen to the amazing adventures she's been on. Ricky was a scientist by training who, on sort of a whim, sort of a push, became a copywriter. We talk about that transition. We talk about how she loves to connect with nature and forage and all of the beautiful mason jars full of nature in her house on display. And we talk about some of her travels. One of the things I loved hearing about, because it just really drives home how important it is to listen to your gut instinct. She shares a story about a moment when she did listen to her gut instinct, even though it didn't necessarily make total sense to her at the time, and how beautiful it turned out. And one of the things that she shares is the idea of things will work out. When you take a step, the path will start to reveal itself. And it just takes that first step. And before you know it, you're someplace amazing. So without further ado, let's get into the show. You are listening to the In Kinship Podcast, a podcast for makers who crave an adventurous, beautiful, lit up life on their own terms. And I'm your host, Tina Vandenberg. I started my business, Kinship Handwork, about 5 years ago. And one of the very first things I started it with were retreats on Mackinac Island, which you've heard plenty about, but also was my initial course called Sew Clothes You Love. I had spent 15 or 16 years sewing clothing that I loved. I had a nearly completely handmade wardrobe. I still do. I loved how I felt in the clothing that I made, even though I'm not your traditional perfect size, whatever that means. I like how lit up I feel, how supported I feel by the clothing I make and the clothing that I wear. And so I put together all the ways over those 14 years that I became somebody who sewed things that I loved. It's very rare that I sew something that doesn't work out for me. And so I wanted to share that with all of you. And so for October, I am launching my Sew Clothes You Love course, which is a course that you can buy any old time, but I'm launching it with a half off coupon. And the coupon code is HALF23, H-A-L-F-23. And I'm also, there's two more exciting parts to this. I'm going to do the course live. So you'll still get the pre-recorded videos that have been around for a while. Actually, they've been completely redone since 2019 when it first came out. You'll get those videos and you get the handouts and all of that, but you're also gonna get live lessons from me for 6 weeks. And then at the end of 6 weeks, you're gonna get an opportunity to schedule a one-on-one session with me to go over your questions, to talk about the adjustments that you need to make, and to do this little bit of homework that I give you at the very end. I'm so excited. If you want to join us, you only have until October 12th to do so. So please jump on the website, kinshiphandwork.com, and check out Sew Clothes You Love. And now, on to our show. I am here today with Ricky Oldenkamp. Ricky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's delightful to have you. I have known Ricky, for those of you listening, I've known Ricky for a long time in my life, and I have not gotten to know her in probably 20 years, really, to know what she's been up to. But I've been watching her from afar, and I know that she's started her own creative business as far as copywriting goes, and that she's worked on building her own little house at some point in Michigan, and that she's got other things going on in her life, and that she loves to travel. And so I thought it'd be really fun, and that's a very simplification of who she is my understanding, but she's going to help fill in those gaps for us. I thought it'd be really fun to talk with her today and share her experiences on the podcast. So, Ricky, one of the things I like to start out by asking is if you identify as a creative or a maker, and if you do, what that looks like for you and who has been inspirational in your life.
So before I started my business, which as a copywriter, it is a creative business, I had a whole career in biology and natural resources management. And at that time, I considered myself a scientist, which I wouldn't have thought of myself as a creative or a maker at that point. But underlying that career, it is very creative in terms of coming up with research ideas and then crafting an actual research project. At the end, putting together a research journal article, which is published and shared. And it's sort of funny how as I left that career behind, I actually did start to embody more of a maker sort of personality traits. I started to find my creative way because I wanted to have more of that in my life.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anyone is not a creative or a maker if you really get down to the details of it.
Yes, definitely. I wonder if when you were identifying more as a scientist, right, and not that you would stop being a scientist, but when it was your career and when it was what you were doing, probably had some sort of identity around, would the idea of calling yourself a creative have made you seem less serious?
I do think there is an aspect to embodying that kind of scientist personality that you want to be taken seriously. Right. And not to say that there aren't any sort of creative artsy scientists out there. Of course they exist. But I think that I leaned heavily into wanting to be taken seriously. And I never considered myself a traditional artist because I wasn't drawing or painting or throwing pots or sewing garments. I wouldn't have thought about myself as a maker that way. But it was actually through leaving that career and no longer having natural resources be a part of my daily work job life that I found myself spending more time in nature just because I wanted to be there and it was no longer my job, which led me to doing most of the making that I do now, which is not on the career side. And that's more of my like foraging, kitchen witching type creative side that I have. So once I was no longer in the realm of doing scientific research out in nature, I could just enjoy being there. And I started to look around and I wanted to know what plants were there. And then I started to want to know what plants were edible. Right. And once I started collecting those plants, I wanted to know what to do with them. And I got into making all sorts of potions. I got into, taking the wild berries that I collected and putting them in my kombucha or drying leaves for tea or making infused vinegars. And once I started doing that and sharing those with friends, I did realize that was a creative act. I did embody more being a maker. And that was like outside of even the creative work that I do as a copywriter now.
Yeah. Are you still a kitchen witch, as you say?
I am. It's one of my favorite things. I've recently moved to Alaska and had to learn a whole new set of plants, whole new set of edible plants that I can use in my kitchen witching. And it's been really fun because here the seasons are so rapid. You need to really be on top of your foraging because things will be gone. But one of the nice things about being a forager and being able to collect these items and then producing some sort of way to preserve them is that I can have that joy of something from the summer season when it's the dark, dark winter here. Right. And being able to share that with friends too, I see how much it lights them up. So I love that, being able to share that joy of a different season with someone that way.
Okay, so I have a question for you. So I have dabbled just a little bit in medicinal herbs and foraging and collecting and things like that. And I have a few things hanging from my little house from the ceiling drying, right? They've been drying for like years, but they're hanging there because they look cool. And I did imagine when I first was building my small house, I kind of pictured it as like this little witchy cottage, right? Full of eye of note, all different things, little jars and concoctions and like plants hanging from the ceiling, and like definitely my hair would have twigs in it and things like that. that hasn't quite occurred, although I can see it happening in the future. I need to get more settled first, but Is that what your little cottage looks like in Alaska?
Well, I was just explaining to someone the other day that I have mason jars upon mason jars of things kind of stacked up in a pretty little wall. And I could put all of those things away, but I like seeing them.
Yeah.
So I do like having my creations around. It makes me happy to have that stuff in front of me. And I spend all day now working on a computer, and it's nice to have the nature inside with me in that way.
Yes, I can completely see that. What is your favorite thing to forage? And what is your favorite thing to make?
Okay, that's a great question. So it would be hard to pick an absolute favorite, but of course, foraging for berries is always wonderful because those are super delicious. This year, I just spent some time foraging for wild blueberries up in a mountain pass, which I think you're familiar with, Hatcher Pass. Yeah. And it's a beautiful experience where so many people will drive out there to just go out into the mountains and collect buckets of blueberries. And I've now frozen some of those so that way I can use them in baked goods throughout the winter. But also I'm making some infused vinegars, and I'll use them in kombucha. I'm thinking about drying some for tea this year to test out how that goes. Yeah. But I also am happy about moving into our next season, which will be the highbush cranberry season here.
What do you do with them?
I do a lot of similar things with those, but last year I made a really good liqueur with them, and I'll definitely be replicating that. That was a favorite with some friends. And I've also juiced those in the past to use in kombucha.
Very nice. So I keep bees, as you probably know, and I've recently taken to mead, because it makes me feel like I have some sort of Viking roots, right? Like I want to have a tankard and be like, more mead, wench, right? It's kind of how I envision it. And like maybe there's a big leg, nobody can see my teeth right now, but like a big leg that I'm eating into, like it feels very grounded, I guess, if you will.
Sure.
And so I have been looking for some blackberries to make with my meat. So that is just beginning for me. I have not begun it, but I've been thinking about it and using my honey and creating some meat. So we'll see if that happens.
Ooh. I would love to get into making mead as well. So far, my only dabbles with honey have been collecting elderberry, like so the elderflower before they become berries, and infusing a honey with that. And it just takes on the floral flavor and it keeps that floral smell over time. So I think honey is an amazing preserving mechanism I haven't gotten to delve into enough yet.
Definitely. And I have a good friend who is an herbalist as well. And she often will infuse garlic in honey for the cold season, right? So then you will take a spoonful and it's like, it's pungent, right? It's like, woo! But you're getting all of the beautiful antibacterial and coating kind of elements of the honey. I can't speak to that right now. As well as all of the garlic is for your immune system. And it feels like you're doing something great for your body, even if you're like, whoa, as you eat it.
For sure. Yeah, it's funny how even though I thought that I was maybe leaving a career in science, how much of my scientific background I've brought into this world, because it's looking into the active mechanisms of plants, like you're talking about, like what is this actually able to do for your body? How is it supporting your body? My scientific background and the periods of time that I've done research have definitely allowed me to lean into learning that information, retaining that information, and then also sharing it with other people.
Yeah. So what do you think when you're out there foraging or when you're making a tincture or when you're making a salve or whatever you're making, what does that connect to deep inside of you?
So it's sort of a feeling of being part of nature instead of separate from it for me. A lot of the times that I spent in doing research, I was the observer. Yeah. So I was on the outside and trying not to make any sort of effect upon whatever it was that I was doing research on, because that would hurt the experiment.
Right.
And when I can just be in nature out there foraging, I like having that activity of foraging that makes me part of nature. So I do follow, you know, best practices for not over foraging an area. if I'm out there collecting something and someone walks by and they ask me about it, I'm able to tell them about it and share that knowledge, help them be more a part of nature too. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's wonderful to have an act that I can do in nature, since we don't live. It's not like we are living in nature nowadays. We generally live inside shelters, but an act to be in nature and a part of it.
Yeah, a connection. Mm-hmm. I could see that. I can see that completely. And I wonder if the same is true for you too, that often when I forage or I make something, actually, I'll tell you the story. So my little boy, who's 7, we were out in the spring and we were getting wild ramps or leeks, a lot of people call them. And so we're picking ramps, looking for morels, which we didn't find any, but we found ramps. And I, at the time, was having a lot of trouble with my fine motor skills in my hands, so I couldn't dig them out. So I gave him the little shovel and I was sitting on a stump and just like enjoying nature. And he was digging up the ramps and picking the very biggest ones and like just naturally, right? Like jumping from cluster to cluster, right? Just in the way that we do that. I have found that this happens with me when I pick berries as well. Like I want to be systematic and like get all the berries, like you're eating corn, right? Like get all the berries through the bush. But I don't. I'm like, I pick a few and then I'm like, oh, that one looks good. And then I'm over there and I'm picking a few over there. And I wonder if we have evolved to do that so we don't over pick. I've always wondered that if that was the case. But that's how he was picking leeks, like from clump to clump, because he also wanted to find the biggest bulbs, right? So he's picking them. And then we get done and we leave. And he's like, Mom, it feels so good to get your food from the forest. And I'm like, it does, buddy. And I thought, wow, I'm sure that I've expressed something to some degree in his life like that. But like, mm-hmm. he still came to that conclusion himself just from like that feeling of like self-sustainability. I mean, obviously we can't just live on leeks. It's not going to sustain us for the rest of our lives. But there's a feeling of like being capable that mm-hmm. comes from that. And I wonder if you would get that same kind of feeling when you forage.
Yeah, I think they're beyond even the capability of being able to find your own food. There's something about the abundance of food as well. There's so much that can be provided if you start to look. And I was explaining this to a friend once. I wasn't finding the right words. Like I couldn't find the word abundance in the moment, but I was like, there's just free food. It's just out in the forest.
It's available.
It's right. available for you.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that we have so much abundance. There's a wealth of things out there that can either feed you or heal you, support you in some way. And all it takes is a little bit of learning and we have access to that.
Yeah. I wonder, so I'm remembering now that you spent some time in South America and I spent just a very brief amount of time in the Dominican Republic. Like a week, right? So this is a very different thing. But I was struck in the Dominican Republic, because we stayed in this small village in a little like hovel outside of somebody's house that like had sheets for one of the walls. And like, you know, it was very rustic and very much in the community, which is what we were seeking when we went there. Mm-hmm. And I was struck by how many fruit trees and how much available food there was just in the forest, right? Like there's bananas and pineapples and like all a variety of different, like mangoes, of course, like all over the place. Like there's all of this fruit. And I thought, and of course we have something somewhere, like you can find wild apples nowadays. And and definitely we've got lots of berries and we have lots of other things that we can collect, but like the abundance felt humongous. And I wonder if you had that kind of an experience when you were in South America.
Yeah, it was interesting. The first time that I went there, I actually was in high school. I got really lucky to be a part of a program you had to apply for. There were only a few students that were selected to go spend some time at a research station. And I was able to meet a lot of researchers there that shared with us, you know, the different plants that were surrounding the research station. And I found it was so wild that they just basically lean over the edge of the railing and pick their breakfast. It didn't seem like we had something like that around us. And while we don't have that in every season here, of course, when you're in a more temperate climate, we do have a lot of food that is available around us. But the abundance that's out there, if you know what the plants are, is actually pretty large.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely felt like, at least in that culture, it was more the norm to just pick your breakfast as you're walking to work, right? And here that would be less normal.
Oh, yes.
One, because you're driving to work. Yeah.
This is true. I've had an experience in the past before when I was first getting to know a lot of quote unquote weeds that we find in our yards, that I had neighbors that found me out in my yard, like, you know, on my hands and knees, kind of like picking little things from the yard. I've definitely gotten the reaction that that's odd.
Right.
But I mean, even so much as the common dandelion, like the flower, the leaves, the roots, all of that's edible.
Yeah.
We could eat the whole plant if we wanted to.
Right.
All of the weeds that we have around, there's usually either like a food or medicinal use for them.
Yeah, that is very cool. And I think it does speak to our cultural disconnect from nature, that we expect food to come from a grocery store. And I don't know if this is accurate or not. It was a meme, so you just never really know. But it was saying that like the very first supermarket didn't come to the U.S. until like 1946. Not to say there wasn't stores, grocery stores of some sort, but the first supermarket. And I thought, wow, that is not that long ago for us to be so dependent upon it. It's really intriguing.
It is intriguing that it brings up two different thoughts for me. One is I've heard this statistic, and I would need to look it up to be sure. But I've heard that most supermarkets only have about 3 days worth of food or so on hand if everybody needed all of that food at once in the community, which is really wild if you think about it. If something happened, we saw this with the pandemic, if something happened where there's a rush on items, it becomes very difficult to be able to support ourselves. And then it also made me think about the time that I've spent in Spain. So I was really fortunate to go and do the Camino. And if anybody hasn't heard of that, it's a very long walk. It's a pilgrimage in Spain. And you can take different routes, but generally the most popular route is about a month long. And you walk through a lot of small communities, and they don't have supermarkets. They have the market. And it's only open, you know, at certain times, but a lot of people are getting their food fresh every day from the market. And I started to learn how spoiled I was as an American, just assuming food would be available at all times, because in Spain, they take siesta very seriously. So a lot of things shut down in the afternoon and you cannot get access to food. And so I started to get more in a rhythm of making sure that I made it to the market every day to take the food that I needed to be able to either walk that whole day or be able to cook for myself that night. And I learned to live in that different rhythm. So I think it's possible for us to live in different ways, whether that be doing more collecting or growing a garden or just preserving some of our food. But we oftentimes just rely on the supermarket, that the easy system.
Yeah.
But we might not always want to do that. Sometimes it enriches your life to do something else.
Yeah. So you've mentioned a couple of places you've been. Tell us more about your, I would call it, love of travel and what prompts you to go and like some of the places you've been.
I got really lucky, as I said, that I had that first trip in high school. I was able to see what was possible beyond not only just, you know, my small town in Michigan, but beyond the U.S. And it made me hungry to know other cultures and to understand what was out there to discover. So because I came from a family where I was the first person in my family actually to graduate from college, I did go the college route and I started doing research projects. And that's how I was getting myself to these locations. It was because of a research project that I had to go to South America. Was because of a research project that I ended up going to Borneo to do research with orangutans there. And so I did a lot of these really wild trips that I felt like I had to have a purpose for them.
Yeah.
But after a while, I started to realize that I could travel for pleasure. It didn't have to make sense to anyone else why I wanted to go. And I've been able to do some other trips. As I mentioned, Spain, I've been to Germany and Italy, and I've been to Guatemala and Central America, and I have so many other places I still need to go. And I look forward to continuing to meet people in those places, because that's been some of my best experiences is meeting from people, hearing their stories, seeing how much we actually relate to each other, even if we're both on the other side of the world from where we actually live. And sometimes travel has been kind of a expediator to those relationships. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily in your home atmosphere. You may never see that person again. So sometimes you skip all the pleasantries and talking about the weather, and you really get down to your real stories. And as a very nosy person who wants to know everyone's stories anyway, I love just getting down to the real story.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a connection there. There's an authenticity that's really nice. I don't do well with small talk myself. Like, I'd rather just go deep, because
for sure
it lights me up, quite honestly. Like, if I'm going to look at it, like, we do things from our own perspective almost exclusively, right? And so, like, that's the truth of it, is like talking about things that are like a deeper connection or a heart connection just lights me up. And I know that some people love the banter that can happen or the lightness that can happen in small talk, and like, I can appreciate that, but like, my soul is like right there. I hear that.
Yeah, I think we relate to each other in that way.
Yeah, for sure. And now a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Kinship Handwork. I want you to know, if you are listening in October of 2023, I am launching my Sew Clothes You Love course on October 12th. And I would love for you to join us. Sew Clothes You Love is all about determining your style, what it is that lights you up, how you want to show up in the world. It's part style school, part planning, and part adjusting the sewing pattern before you begin. So we go through getting to know yourself deeper and figuring out what it is that you want to actually sew. And then we talk about planning that project or planning that wardrobe or planning that capsule or whatever that might be. And then we move on to determining how to adjust your commercial sewing patterns to fit your body before you even begin. This course is near and dear to my heart. It is the first course I created back in 2019, and it really embodies how I went from being quite unhappy with the clothing that I could find in the store, really hard on my own body, to loving who I am and what I wear and wearing clothing that supports who and how I want to show up in the world. And it also is my framework for how I made sewing with commercial sewing patterns simpler. So join us. We're going to do it live. It is pre-recorded. You can get all of those recordings right away, but we're going to do each lesson live as well. So I would love to see you October 12th. Jump on the website, kinshiphandwork.com. So you left your career in science and took up copywriting. How did that happen?
This is a question I get often, because it seems like such a strange, maybe not strange, but like such a big change.
Right.
And it, at the end of the day, isn't as large of a change as you would think. So when I decided I wanted to leave biology and natural resources management, I knew that I was going to need to rely on some skills that I had gained through that career, because I'd been doing it for a decade. And a lot of the skills really boiled down to my research abilities, being able to take in information, organize it in a way, and then represent that information. And then also my writing ability, because I was doing these research projects and then I was publishing journal articles about the research. So when I started looking at what I could do with those skills, I just, went to the Oracle of Google, like we all do when we're looking for the next step in life. And I started typing in the skills that I had and looking for other careers that utilized those. And I found copywriting, which was something I had never even heard of before, because as a very minimalist person myself, I'm not much of a consumer, I would have never thought of being in advertising. And I didn't realize that there was actually a path to a writing career that you could have in advertising, and it didn't have to involve selling your soul for products you didn't believe in.
Yeah.
But actually that does exist. And I was really fortunate to run across a ad on Facebook.
Oh, we love it.
But yes, that was sharing about a copywriting training program. And I found that this copywriting training program that just sort of landed in my lap had an emphasis on being able to work with clients that you really loved and believed in, more so than just being able to sell anything. And so that made me a little bit more comfortable with the thought. And I was at a period in time where I didn't feel like I was growing anymore in my science career. I had kind of hit this plateau in terms of my earnings, and definitely in terms of my flexibility and ability to, you know, do the travel that I wanted to do, because you don't get a whole lot of time off in those more 9-to-5 type jobs. So I just decided to take the leap, and I started the training program, and I just went all in, and I did the whole program in a couple of weeks. And then I started to reach out to friends and family and ask them if I could help them with projects. I started doing a couple of things for free and then a couple of things for trade. And then it was a real journey between being able to do that and then selling myself, because I had had to do grant proposals in the past and sell the idea of my research and me being the principal investigator. Mm-hmm. But then being able to not rely on having had so many years at something, it was definitely an effort for me to be able to go out there and tell someone I could do their marketing for them. But as these things generally happen, you just put one foot in front of the other, you get one project down, and then over 100 projects you've done. And it's been 3.5 years now that I've been running my business.
Very nice. Very nice. So as a copywriter, what kind of things do you write?
So it can be all over the board, but I like to focus on the personality assets that people need, which would be their website, because, you know, we live in the age now where even if somebody hears about you word of mouth, they want to know that you're legitimate. They're going to go look at your website. They're going to dive into if you have social media to try to get to know you more. So I help people with social media assets. And then one thing that I really like is email, because email and being able to create a newsletter for somebody and continue that conversation over time is something really powerful. I think that being able to take someone's personality, be able to learn that enough to write as them, and then continue to be able to help them speak to their audience is definitely a skill that needs to be honed, because trying to take on someone else's personality for just a one-off project like doing a website, you can really work closely with the client in terms of perfecting that language. But then when you're doing it constantly and the client is going to be a little less involved because you're producing these newsletters, you really need to know them. You have to intimately know their stories. And that helps me use that nosy nature that I have in a powerful way, because I get to dig in with people on the interviews that we have and talk about their stories. I organize them. I create this cohesive story we're going to tell over time. And then I can lay that out beautifully. And it marries together all of that research background, the organizing, the data collection that I've done in the past, but more with this creative endeavor that I have now, where I get to put words to things that my clients can't always find words for. Yeah. And I love it.
You can tell. You can tell. As you're talking about it, you can tell the passion that you have for it. And I have a new appreciation for copywriting as you're talking. Like, definitely, I love to write my own newsletters and I can understand the joy of that. But it would be hard for me to imagine writing in somebody else's voice and taking on their story. And so I can, I appreciate hearing how that process works for you and how it sort of slows it down. So like in my own business, right, there's so many different things I need to provide for my own business. And I know that you know that. because you're providing mm-hmm. that service, but then you also have to sell your business out there to the world, mm-hmm. right? And there are a million different little things that you have to do at all the different times. And sometimes yes. the writing or like telling a story over time, or having that ability to be like, I'm going to take this journey. We are going to take this journey together. Like, I have a desire mm-hmm. for that to happen. And sometimes I can make that happen, but it's not very often that I stop without all the other things I'm doing to like, all right, mm-hmm. I'm going to map this out and I'm going to build this story over time. And I admire that. And it's something that I'd like to bring into my business more than I do now.
Oh, absolutely.
So I can see the value in having somebody that's focus is on bringing mm-hmm. that story in. I can see that value in a way that I
yeah.
couldn't 5 minutes ago. So that's really interesting.
Oh, well, thanks for telling me. Yeah, I found that sometimes working with clients that haven't worked with a copywriter in the past mm-hmm. takes a little bit of time before they can understand the role of delegating that work, because either one, they're so passionate and so close to it that it's hard for them to even put words to something to share their stories with me, or to share the deeper outcome that their clients or their customers are looking for, because they're so close to it.
Right.
And of course, when you're running your own business and you have five things on your to-do list, and you know, maybe being able to craft the perfect, you know, newsletters for the next month, it's something on there, but you don't necessarily have the time to do it. That can be one of the things that falls off the to-do list. And so when they're able to take that leap to trust me and able to delegate that work to me, and we do the deep work on the side of collecting those stories and digging into the language, and then me doing research on how their customers speak about things, and I'm utilizing that language in there so the customers feel like we're speaking directly to them, that outcome, if we can put that effort and time into it, is going to pay dividends for them. Yeah. It's just being able to take a moment to take the leap on being able to move forward with somebody else being in your process. And I have had a little bit of pushback before where people are like, well, my newsletter, just for example, my newsletter is so personal. Like, there's no way that like I could have someone else write it for me. But at the end of the day, the client, they're always going to look at that work. It's never going out without them looking at it. So if they wouldn't say something in a specific way, I get to that in the revisions process. Yeah. We make sure it feels aligned, so it feels like you, but maybe instead of it taking you 2 to 3 hours to do something, now your revisions process for it is 20 minutes. Right. And then you can do the other things you're more passionate about doing.
Right. I love hearing that. Thank you for sharing that. I like to explore the idea on this podcast of following your gut, right? Mm-hmm. Feeling like you are compelled to do something, not really understanding why, not necessarily understanding where it's going to go, and just having the bravery to follow it. Like, there's been so many instances in my life where I have done that and beautiful things have occurred. And there are lots of ways that far outnumber the times that I have listened when I didn't listen. And I'm trying to like manage the boat the whole way, right? Like, I'm trying to swim upstream mm-hmm. and I'm not like just going with the flow of it. And so one of my desires in my life is to listen to that intuition even more. So I'm always fascinated when I can hear somebody else's story of when they felt compelled to do something and they just did it and how it worked out for them. And I wonder if you have a story like that to share.
Yeah. So I have also had many instances in my life where I've had a strong gut feeling on something and I've leaned into it and I've seen the outcome be better than I could have even imagined. And I've thought, oh my gosh, what would have happened in my life if I had not done that? Yeah. But one of the examples that comes to mind is the trip that I took in Spain. It was actually during a really sensitive time for me. I had done the experience of doing research in Borneo with orangutans. I had had my Jane Goodall moment of being able to do research with one of the great apes. And it was actually a really hard experience. I was living in the jungle for 4 months at a research station that did not have any internet access, no phone, no mail. And so it was very isolating. At the time, I was working for a foreign university, and I was one of the only native English speakers that was at the station. So I spent a lot of time alone in my thoughts, and I realized that that wasn't what I wanted for the rest of my career. And at that point, I had been all in on primatology. I had thoughts of being able to go to a university and do a PhD in it, and I had to really reorient. I was just getting done with my bachelor's degree, and I felt completely lost that I had now just dissolved a dream that I had had for so many years. Yeah. And it was a dream that had become my identity at that point. And people knew that this is what I was going for, and I got so much praise for going after this lofty goal. And so I needed some time. And during that period where I knew I was going to be finishing my undergrad degree, but I didn't know what was next, I found out about the Camino. And I found out that people walk the pilgrimage for many reasons. And one of them is just to try to figure out what's next in life. And so I felt so compelled that I had to do it. So I figured when I got done with my undergrad degree, I would go do it. I told my family. They, even though I had just been on the other side of the world doing research, they were like, are you crazy? You're going to go spend, you know, over a month in Spain walking by yourself? Because even though at the time I was dating somebody and they wanted to go, I had told him I really needed to go alone. Yeah. So my gut told me I needed to go on this experience alone. And the experience was tough from the very beginning, because during that period of time, there were a lot of strikes going on within the French transit system. And so my original flight got canceled. My new flight came in to the airport, and I was supposed to take a train directly from the airport, but the trains at the Charles de Gaulle airport were all canceled. So I had to find a tram to get across Paris, and I don't speak any French, to find a new train station to try to see if I could get a train, and they only had limited options. And I had some of those magical experiences that sometimes happen where once I finally got on the tram, a man helped me figure out where I needed to get off the tram. Then I showed up and I showed someone my ticket, and they pointed at the train and said, run now. And I did not ask any questions, and I ran. And I gave my ticket to the person who was allowing passengers on. And he took my ticket, allowed me on the train, and then he told me there were no seats. So he sent me back to the luggage area where there were three fold-down seats next to all the bags. And I sat with my knees between two French ladies for an 8-hour train trip of us staring at each other. And I ultimately did end up where I needed to go. And then experience after experience on that trip unfolded where people helped me. People just knew I needed help before I even asked. And I was able to help other people. And it kind of made me realize that no matter the path that I followed, no matter that I didn't know what I was going to do next, if I just showed up and I put one foot in front of the other, it was going to work out. People were going to show up to help me, and I was going to be there to help other people. And that's been the case so far.
That is beautiful. And you know, it tied in, because I actually wondered if you were going to talk about when you were just scrolling Facebook and all of a sudden this copywriting opportunity pops up and you take the leap to follow it from a science background, right? I believe in that same concept with all of my soul. It's easy to lose faith in it. It should doubt it or to question it. But like, if you take that next step, it will unfold. And like, what if we could just live right in that space right there all the time and not worry about what's next and not worry about what's coming and not worry about the things, but like, that would be amazing.
I wish that I could say I have perfected it, but I learn it over and over again each time that I need to trust it.
Yes, that's my experience with it as well. But every time it's like I hear a story like what you just shared with me, and it's like, yes, that's right. It does work out. And like, I was just talking to somebody that I had just met, and I was talking about all of the
the hardships of the past year and the way that things have been difficult and how like it's so expensive to buy property right now and it's so hard to find someone to dig a well and all these things, right? And he just looked at me and like, and not with any animosity, not with any snarkiness, he was like, things have a way of working out. And I'm like, thank you. You're right.
Thanks for the reminder. Yes.
Right. And like, we can know this and we can have examples in our own life. And then it's like, yeah, I don't think we can be reminded of it too often.
That's very true. I thought about telling the story about how I actually took the plunge and made the change between my scientific career and copywriting. And that one is, it's interesting because I think the circumstances in my life aligned such that I was pushed forward into that because I had kind of, like I said, I had plateaued in my career. I wasn't happy. I thought that I should be happy because I loved nature. I loved the outdoors. And there just was some reason I couldn't put my finger on why I couldn't be happy in that career. And ultimately, I made the decision to move forward with my own business because I had been promised a lot of things like insurance and a raise at this position that I had taken not too long before COVID happened. And then when the pandemic was underway, I was made the only essential worker there. And I was taking care of a lot of the responsibility myself and then was told I would not be getting insurance, would not be getting the raise because of the uncertainty that came with COVID. And I just felt like at that point in time, for all of the effort that I'd put into my career, I really wasn't seeing what I deserved. Yeah. And I spoke with my dad, who's a very wise man, and he told me he believed in me and that if I believed that I could make this change, that I could do it and that he'd seen me jump towards opportunities so many times. And then why was this any different?
Yeah.
And it really was that little push. Sometimes we need a little push that allowed me to step into that opportunity and start moving forward. Yeah. And although it was really scary, there were a lot of scary times in the beginning of starting a business, as anybody who is an entrepreneur knows, I just still kept putting one foot in front of the other. And yeah, I found myself here now.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Oh, Ricky, I could talk to you for a really long time, but in fact, I have. I wonder if you might answer a question that I ask all of my guests. And then after we do that, I would love to hear how my listeners can reach you, where they can find you and see what you're doing and maybe see some of those concoctions on social media. I don't know if you've ever put those on there, but like check that out.
I do.
But before we get to that, I wonder if you might share what you wish people knew that you think they might not know deep in their hearts.
I think that I wish people knew how impactful their story could be, because I think oftentimes people will see things through the lens of social media and assume that everyone else has a more exciting life.
Yeah.
Everyone else's life is happier and better. And instead, I've learned more and I've connected with people more through a real raw story on a time that didn't go well for them, versus seeing the happy vacation photos that they put on Facebook. I wish people could understand that that story is what makes them unique. It's what makes them, frankly, actually interesting. Yeah. And we all like being able to connect when you can hear the real person behind something. So whether that be marketing or just in life, I think if somebody is more willing to share their story with me and we can create that connection, I think we have a better chance of maintaining the connection and becoming friends. I like that I get to do that through my work because I couldn't ask for a better way to help people than to help them tell that story. Sometimes it seems like it's hard for them to do so.
Yeah. I can see that. And I agree with you that there's... we can just sense authenticity and we can just feel it on a deeper level. And when there's an authentic sharing, even if it's a joyful, authentic sharing, whatever that story is, it just resonates. And like the there are some very powerful stories I have heard in my life where somebody shares something that's really shameful for them or really hard for them that have immediately opened up other ways in my life for me to see my own shame, my own things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Some of the stories that I end up hearing, of course, these don't necessarily get shared through the marketing, but some of the stories that I end up hearing through the personal talks that I have with people they're really affecting for me in my own personal life. I am always awed by being able to see someone as a raw person when they're able to get down to that intimacy with me. I feel lucky to be able to see that. And I usually try to point that out to them that, you know, it's brave to do that. I feel lucky to show up for it and that I get to do it so often.
Very nice. Oh, I feel like we scratched the surface on so many things. Like, we probably could have a whole podcast about like a million different trips you've been on or different things that you're doing. And like the fact that you're now living in Alaska and like having this sort of ability to shift your life with some sense of freedom, although we talked earlier before the podcast began that when you are your own business, like there's a lot to it as well. Like there is freedom and there is like you are sailing your own ship, but you got to keep the ship afloat as well.
That's true. Yeah.
So there is that aspect. So I say all of that to say thank you for sharing these bits with us and for sharing the pieces that you've shared. And I am left with wonder.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate that. It's been quite a journey to be able to collect all these different experiences. I like being able to share them with people. Mm-hmm. And I'm always an open book too. If anybody has questions about those things, I'd love to share the experiences, give them tips or tell them what not to do, because I've learned those lessons too.
Indeed. So if they do have these questions and they do want to ask you something or they want to just see what you're doing in the world, where can they find you?
So the best place to find me is probably through my website. I do have a contact form that they can get a hold of me there. I am on social media. They can find me there as well. And it's going to be really easy to find me. So my name is Ricki Oldenkamp and it's RickiOldenkamp. And my website is just RickiOldenkamp.com. And on social media, it's just Ricki Oldenkamp. Excellent. So,
Ricki, thanks for being here. It's been a delightful time.
Oh, I loved talking with you.
Thank you for listening to the In Kinship podcast. You just listened to my conversation with Ricki Oldenkamp. Now, I don't know about you, but she almost nearly convinced me to become a copywriter, scrap the sewing business, scrap the podcasting, and tell people's stories. Not really. I actually love what I do, but I found a newfound joy for what she does. And I also loved learning about the connection she has between the natural world and foraging and her insight into just taking one step and trusting that the path would unfold. Thanks for listening, friend. I am so glad that you're here. Would you jump on your podcast listening app and rate the show? I would be so grateful if you would. And I will talk to you next time. Have a great day. And a final word from our sponsor, Kinship Handwork. The Sew Clothes You Love course is a course that is available to purchase at any old time. But right now, October of 2023, I'm having a sale. You can get it for 50% off and you can join the live versions. You always get the pre-recorded lessons and all the handouts, but I'm going to do the lessons live week to week as well. So you can join us for a special live session. And at the end, everyone who participated in this live session can book a one-on-one session with me to talk about your questions, go over your homework, talk about your own adjustments you need to make to the pattern, all of that. This is very exciting. Go to kinshiphandwork.com. And when you check out, use the coupon code HALF23, that's H-A-L-F 23, to get 50% off.